So I thought that it would be good to spend a little time and consider this idea of doctrine. Doctrine, sometimes we're a little bit scared of the word, but doctrine is important. And I think sometimes our concept, when we think of doctrine, our concept is pretty narrow what constitutes doctrine. But doctrine is simply that which is taught. When we think of doctrine, we might think of things like the doctrine of creation. And, you know, there's a lot of arguments throughout Christianity in the world on doctrine, the doctrine of creation. And sometimes it can get kind of like, have we heard it already? Doctrine is stuffy. Doctrine divides. That type of an idea. People don't want to hear doctrine. So you have the doctrine of creation. You have the doctrine of the second coming of Christ. And you know how that can go. There could be a lot of arguments, a lot of different ideas. And I tend to think if we don't understand what all doctrine includes, we can get this idea that it's stuffy, that it's divisive. But doctrine, God the Creator is a doctrine, heaven and hell are doctrines, things like love, forgiveness, humility, sanctification, justification, judgment, and many more are doctrines. The Bible refers to good doctrine, it refers to sound doctrine, the doctrine of Jesus, the doctrine of the apostles. But doctrine even goes farther than that. We heard a lot of doctrine this morning. The doctrine of hearing. That's a teaching. It's hear. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. That's a teaching. Consider with me some good doctrine in the life of Joseph. If you follow Joseph's life, so he was with his father, and his father told him to go and check out his brothers. And so he traveled to his brothers to check them out. And so you can see obedience there. So you see the doctrine of obedience. Joseph seemingly obeyed his parents. You have him shipped off to Egypt, and he was with Potiphar. And we soon notice that this idea of being diligent, the Bible teaches us to be diligent. Whatever the hand finds to do, do it with your might. And you can soon see Joseph put himself right up to the top in Potiphar's house because he understood this doctrine of diligence. Finds himself in a bad situation, and we know that the doctrine of purity kept Joseph from doing the unthinkable that would have completely destroyed his life. Got him in trouble. Got him put in prison. And again, we can see his honesty, his trustworthiness, and his diligence put him right up to the top in the prison. So there's a lot of doctrines in Joseph's life that he embraced, that really turned out to come back to bless him over and over again. You have him later in life when he meets his brothers. The doctrine of forgiveness was something that was written upon his heart. And so when his brothers came before him, it's hard to imagine. But with God, he could look at his brothers with sympathy in his heart. He had already forgiven them. The doctrine of forgiveness. And of course, because of his good doctrine, it landed him as governor in Egypt. And so what we're going to look at today is doctrine and the blessing, teaching, doctrine it is to us, and probably get a little idea of how wide doctrine and teaching is. We also have the good doctrine seen in the life of Daniel. He was carted off to Babylon. He was made a eunuch. He was there in supposed to eat the king's food. And there was teaching and doctrine in his life that he said, here's a line I'm not going to cross because I will be much better on this side than that side. And so he asked the unthinkable. And that was, could you give us this kind of food instead of that? And convinced the man that was over them to do that. Another thing we see in Daniel's life was when he took the risk of his life and he prayed with his window open towards Jerusalem. Now that was in Daniel's life, that was a teaching and a doctrine. Turn with me to 1 Kings and let's just look how doctrine or teaching followed Daniel. And he was willing to do it in spite of possibly being thrown in the... Wow, in spite of. Yeah, he was willing to do it in spite of being thrown in the lion's den. 1 Kings chapter 8, we're going to skip through and just note a couple of verses here. Why did Daniel, at the risk of his life, of being thrown into the lion's den? Who would want to be thrown into the lion's den? Couldn't you just close your windows and pray that they couldn't see you? But in 1 Kings 8, verse 29, Solomon's prayer, he says this, yet have thou respect unto the prayer of thy servant and to his supplication, O Lord my God, to hearken unto the cry and to the prayer which thy servant prayeth before thee today. That was verse 28, verse 29. That thine eyes may be opened towards this high house night and day, even towards the place of which thou hast said, my name shall be there. That thou mayest hearken unto the prayer which thy servant shall make toward this place. Drop down to verse 38. What prayer and supplication shall ever be made by any man or by all thy people Israel, which shall know every man the plague of his own heart and spread forth his hands towards this house, then hear thou in heaven thy dwelling place and forgive. Down in verse 42. For they shall hear of thy great name, and of thy strong hand, and of thy stretched out arm, when he shall come and pray towards this house. Verse 44, if thy people go out to battle against their enemy, whithersoever thou shalt send them, and shall pray unto the Lord towards the city which thou hast chosen, and toward the house, pray towards the house that I have built for thy name, then hear thou in heaven their prayer and their supplication. And verse 48. And so return unto thee with all their heart, with all their soul, in the land of their enemies. That's where Daniel was. Which led them away captive. He was a captive. And pray unto thee toward their land, which thou gavest unto their fathers. The city which thou hast chosen, the house which I have built for thy name. Then hear thou their prayer and their supplication in heaven, thy dwelling place, and maintain their cause. And I can only imagine when Daniel heard that whoever prays to any other god but the king. I'm supposing that he went that day, knelt down, opened up his window of all times that he would have wanted to pray towards Jerusalem or pray towards the temple. It was then. And I'm sure that he wanted his calls maintained. And so he opened his window as he always did. He knelt down and he prayed towards the temple. So that was a doctrine. That was a teaching they had. The young men and young ladies grew up in those times knowing that it was important to pray towards Jerusalem. Now we don't have that today anymore. The doctrine of or teaching of trust in God rather than man finds Daniel in the lion's den. and became friends with the ferocious animals. In Daniel 6:20, and when he came to the den, that's the king, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? And so just some illustrations, practical illustrations of teachings or doctrines that were very beneficial and precious in the lives of these young men. So some people call doctrine stuffy. They say doctrine divides, and they say doctrine doesn't matter. You might remember me talking about it before. You know that the early founding fathers of this country, some of them at least, were deists. They didn't believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ. And so you have Benjamin Franklin, and at his death, you had somebody from some theology teacher that went to Benjamin Franklin and asked him what he thinks about the divinity of Jesus Christ. And he basically responded and said, you know, I've never bothered myself to consider it. And so close to the end of my life, I'm not going to bother now to figure it out when I will have a much easier way to find out shortly. Benjamin Franklin, it's going to be too late. He said, if somebody wants to believe in it and it betters their life, then he's good with it. So that's where he was. That's the way he looked at doctrine. Someone once said, indifferentism, being indifferent about doctrine, teaching, makes no hearers. Heroes makes no heroes of the faith. And so what that tells me, it is really important that I take an interest in teaching, in commandments, in God's word, in doctrine. Someone else said, great saints have always been dogmatic, standing for doctrine. You know, I think sometimes we find doctrine so abused. Just for instance, like the second coming of Christ, there's so many different ideas, and people are so dogmatic that it almost wants to make me just not even look at it. But the truth is, great saints have always been dogmatic. They know what they believe. They know why they believe it. They appreciate doctrine. They appreciate teaching. Someone else said there could be no spiritual health without doctrinal knowledge. We cannot have the benefits of Christianity if we shed its doctrines. A.W. Tozer said it would be impossible to overemphasize the importance of sound doctrine in the life of a Christian. He's saying it would be impossible to overemphasize it. You know, there's a lot of people who they say away with doctrine. Let's just talk about loving Jesus. Away with doctrine. A.W. Tozer says we can't overemphasize it. It's impossible to overemphasize it. Right thinking about all spiritual matters is imperative if we would have right living. As men do not gather grapes of thorns nor figs of thistles, so sound character does not grow out of unsound teaching. So my encouragement, what I'd like to do today, is just encourage you to take a real interest and actually a liking, and not only a liking, an appreciation for teaching, for doctrine. We have some verses that emphasize the need of having sound doctrine. Ephesians 4:14, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men, and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. So we have here being carried about with winds of doctrine. That's all kinds of teachings that come along. We've got to be so careful with that. He is saying here, if we read the verses before, he gave us pastors and teachers to help us mature so that we become sound, rather than all these other teachings out there that are unsound, all these other doctrines that are out there that they come pressing in, and this person will believe this, so they'll be over here, then they'll believe that over there, and they'll just be bounced around all their life with winds of doctrine. Proverbs 4, 1 and 2 says, "Hear ye children the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine." Father talking to his son. "Sit up, son. Listen to what I have to say. We heard this morning about hearing. Sit up and listen to what I have to say. I am sharing with you good doctrine." 1 Timothy 4:16, "Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee." Take heed unto yourself. Take heed unto your doctrine, the things you believe. Take heed. There's a warning here. Take heed. Sit up. Learn. What do you believe? Believe in good doctrine. You'll save yourself, and you'll save those that hear you. 2 John 1:9, "Whosoever transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. He that abideth in the doctrine of Christ hath both the Father and the Son." The value of good doctrine. Again, I don't know if you've heard it or not. There are people who shy away from doctrine. It's stuffy. It's divisive. Let's just talk about loving Jesus. It's important to take an interest in and know the doctrine of Jesus Christ. Does doctrine matter? Does it matter what we believe? Does it matter what we believe about things like creation, about salvation, about sanctification, about judgment? It does. My wife went to public school for the first 7 years of her life. She went to a Christian day school, Maristown Mennonite School, for 8th and 9th. And you know why her parents pulled her out of the public school? They pulled her out of the public school because some of the things they were teaching on creation. At that point, they were teaching the gap theory. Doesn't matter what we believe. They were teaching the gap theory. And she was willing to buy in on it simply from the perspective that the Bible does say that one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as one day with the Lord. And so, yeah, maybe it was, instead of the morning and the evening were the first day, and the morning and the evening were the second day, and the morning and the evening were the third day. Just maybe there was thousands of years of span of time between each one. Then I begin to think, why are people trying to insert thousands of years in between there? What's the point? Is it important what we believe? And so her parents became very concerned because it is important what we believe. And so pulled her out. Evolution and prehistoric man is a result of folks who left the traditional creation theology, the simple teaching of a 24-hour day and 7 days of, or 6 days of creation. I thought it was interesting to notice that they have all these prehistoric people It's just really interesting. So you had this one man, I can't even say the name, but he was supposedly living 1 million years before Christ, B.C., 1 million years B.C. You have the Java man who lived 700,000 years before Christ. And I'm like, what's the point? It's pretty interesting just looking at the Java man, and we'll get to that. The pecking man was 150,000 years before Christ. The Neanderthal man was 30,000 to 25,000 years before Christ. And then you have a few more. But what was quite interesting to me was the Java man who was supposedly born living 700,000 years before Christ. His remains were supposedly discovered near Trinil in the central part of the Isle of Java. That's why he's called Java Man. And he was discovered in 1891. He was discovered by Mr. Du Bois. All that he had was the top of the skull, two teeth, and a picture of the femur bone, apparently where it was laying in the earth and left its form. The interesting thing was, no scientists were allowed to view the actual remains until 1923. So this was all kept secret by Mr. Du Bois from 1891 to 1923. And the question is, why did he keep it secret? Why would he let no other scientists look at it? This was his thing. That was 32 years. In 1923, there was a doctor. His name was Alice Hertlicka. He pressed Du Bois to see the remains. But at that point, he was very hesitant to show. He did show him then, hesitantly, the three teeth. At this point, he showed him three teeth, a fragment of the lower jaw, and two fragments of the top of the skull. The cast of the Java ape man was reconstructed from these fragments, mixed with plaster of Paris and larger amounts of imagination. For Du Bois, this was the missing link to evolution in prehistoric man. The question is, why was no reputable scientist allowed to view it for 32 years? And yet, many in the world believe it. They believe the theory of the Java ape man. Well, this Dr. Alice stated that this, from his perspective, this was the remains of a true human being within the last 6,000 years. Does our doctrine matter? And I'm here to tell you, it does matter. I think most of you know that I have a sign along Interstate 78, and I think some of you would know some of the stories that have went with that sign. I put a lot of messages on that sign, but do you want to know one of the messages that is the most, I get the most pushback? It's a very simple message. It's nothing wild. It's just that if you mention that Jesus is the only way, Jesus says, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. That is one message Christians don't even like. The world doesn't like. And whenever I put that out, there's been a lot of pushback. You're narrow-minded. I found that to be very interesting. So Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and life. That's doctrine. That's truth. And it is important that we believe it. No man comes to the Father but by me. Does our doctrine matter? If you really believe in Muhammad or Buddha or Catholicism or this belief that all roads lead to heaven, once we stand before the judgment seat, will it matter?
It will matter.
The message that got the most publicity was the message, and I put it out very sincerely. I never expected the response I got. I simply put out Santa is a myth. Lying to your children brings moral decay. I mean, that hit the roof. I think within the first few weeks we got, we got like 300 calls that month of people, and everybody was upset. So we had got front page news in the newspaper. The Lebanon Daily News showed a picture of Santa Claus standing on the side of the road, looking at my sign, tears running down his cheeks. He says, "This man just spoiled Christmas for me." And then, I hear a horn. A trucker blues. Somebody believes in me. And they had a real emotional story. Front page news. And that ran not only that paper, but a few other papers. I was away. I was out of town. I was coming home. My wife called me and said, ABC Channel 29 is at our door. They want to do an interview. And so I said, well, I won't be home for a couple hours. They went out the lane and they sat down the road for an hour or two waiting for me to get home to interview me about this sign. They interviewed me, and their questions, of course, were why I feel like I have right to do that. Just a number of questions. Then they went down the road. If you know how Bethel looks, they go down through Bethel, down past School Road, to the Lutheran church there on the left. And they found two ladies coming out of church after church was left over, and they interviewed them. What do you think of that sign and what it says? And they said, I believe we can believe in Jesus and believe in Santa Claus too. So they got what they wanted. And this got aired all over. People in Europe saw about this crazy man in Berks County that put up a sign like that. But here's the thing that I think is interesting. Of all the things I put out on my sign, like one man, one woman equals marriage, God hates sin, adultery, lying, stealing, homosexuality, a host of other things. I've also had messages of God's love, His care, He's not prejudiced, and all. I put it all out. But I constantly have been getting bombarded. Why do you got to put such controversial messages out there? Can't we just talk about God loving us? That's the message the world wants to give. But here's the thing that I wanted to consider. So this was a week before Christmas, and finally we come to December 25, and the whole area was just all up in arms. The phone was constantly ringing. I finally, every time I answered the phone, I would say, wait, before we discuss this thing, I want to know if you're a Christian. Most of them were. And then so I would listen to them, and then I would ask them, as a Christian, do you believe it's okay to lie? Well, then they didn't know what to say. But this finally came to December 25th. It's in the morning, and I finally say, enough of this. And so I'm out there. I'm changing my sign. I figured it's time to put something else out there. You must be born again is what I put out there. Because I figured these people are going to come from all over the place to see this sign. So I'm there up on the ladder changing the sign. And here comes the car down the road. He pulls off. He's going west. He pulls off on the other side. He waits till there's no traffic. He runs, jumps over the barrier, runs over, comes up over the bank to the fence. And he says, oh, by the way, he says, I'm a Sunday school teacher. I am responsible for the youth at our church. And he had a whole number of criteria that he is. But he says, you know, I think you've taken this too far. And I said, so, do you have children? Yeah, I have children. So I said, are you okay with lying? Well, and then he came, made some kind of lame excuse. I said, I want to tell you, if you're willing to lie to your children when they're 3 years old, they're going to lie to you when you're 16 years old. Does doctrine matter? For him, this was just a silly thing. It didn't really matter. It's just, It's not harmless. Thou shalt not lie. The Bible even says that all liars shall have their part in the lake of fire. Does doctrine matter? We used to, when my wife and I lived in Bowmansville, for the first 3 years we were married, we made friends with a family that moved out of Philadelphia. They were a Christian family, but they weren't interested in doctrine. And so when we want to talk to them about the Christmas tree and we took them to Jeremiah, the lady said, please, please don't tell me. I don't want to have to know it. She didn't want to know it. But anyhow, they told their children about Santa Claus. And I don't even know how old the girl was. If she was 6 or 7, she was at our house. And I don't know how this leaked out, that we don't believe that Santa is real. She couldn't believe it. She went running out to her mother, crying. Mom, is this true? Does doctrine matter? In reality, it's not enough to believe in doctrines such as God, inspiration of the Scriptures, the fall of man, redemption, the divinity of Christ, regeneration, resurrection, eternal judgment, and such alike, but it is necessary to believe and hold the doctrine in a true way. Clear doctrine. There are many that will say divorce and remarriage are wrong except under certain circumstances. But now look at the mess we have. Broken homes. Separated families. Mothers raising their families without a father in the home. Even secular studies tell us that a deadbeat dad is better than no dad. In Christendom today, the divorce rate is as high in Christendom as it is in the world. Does doctrine matter? Does it matter what we believe about divorce and remarriage? You may have heard me talk about this before, but my grandfather was a drunk. My mother tells stories of my great-grandfather. How would it be to go visit your grandfather? And here comes your grandfather home. After you're there, he comes home. He's drunk. He stumbles in. And my mother tells a very vivid story of how he stumbled into the house and fell and knocked his head really hard on the wash sink that was right inside the door. And she was afraid to go to visit her grandparents because he was a drunk. He was so set on drinking that for a while the church would put him out. The church would bring him back in again. The church would put him out. The church would bring him back in again. Most of the times, he wasn't a church member because he couldn't give up his drink. Now, I'm a little sympathetic to my great-grandfather because he was not a part of the conservative Anabaptist churches. He married a Mennonite woman is how the homes got among the Mennonite people. And so he never really found himself. One time, my uncle Norman, who used to own Conestoga Wood, he tells of the story of one time he was at his grandpa's place and grandpa jumps in his car. He knows where grandpa's going. And it isn't far. It's just down the blue ball to the beer house. And so he hops on his bike and he gets down there in time to get in front of the door before my great-grandpa goes in to drink. And he says, "Grandpa, please don't go in here." Some of the other men who were his drinking buddies said, "Hey, what's going on here? Amos, what's the deal?" He said, "Oh, my grandson here is trying to keep me out." They said, "Go home. Go back home." Doesn't matter. But what I wanted to get to is this about divorce, living together. My mother was just this big, and my grandfather was also a drunk. Because they brewed it in their basement. He drank it from little on up. He's married. He come home drunk. And finally, after a couple years of that, my grandmother woke up one morning and went to him and said, I'm going to leave with the children. I'm not living with a drunkard. My grandfather went out to the barn door, and I think out of sheer willpower, said if it means keeping the family together, I'm going to stop. The doctrine of keeping the family together, no divorce. One out in that case. Does it matter what we believe? It does matter what we believe. My grandfather saw the value of the family unit. What about things like church and state separation? Does it matter what we believe? Churches and conservative ones at that in the past have felt that capital punishment, the death sentence for a criminal, was wrong, and it was wrong for the government to initiate, and they have tried numerous times to try to stop capital punishment. Now, when I read my Bible in Romans chapter 13, I read there that the government is ordained by God, and the Bible says that they don't carry the sword in vain. You know what that means? The policeman carries a pistol, carries a gun, and they're going to use it. And God is not going to stop them. That is not for us. He has assigned the world and the men of the world, and in his foreknowledge, that he knew there would be a whole vast people that would not accept, and he's going to have to protect his church, the apple of his eye. So he has government to do that. And he said they are going to carry a sword, and they're going to use the sword. And so I don't think we should, as we need to know doctrine. And doctrine does matter. I don't think we should be campaigning for capital punishment, but I believe we need to simply accept the doctrine we have teaches us that they carry the sword and that they don't carry it in vain. How they punish or do not punish is not our prerogative. We should not be advocating for or against the death penalty. We really need to keep the lines clear between church and state. Non-resistance. Does our doctrine matter? Does our doctrine matter? I believe our doctrine does matter. And I'm guessing most of you know this poem of the unbarred door, but I'd like to read it. It's a little bit of reading, but I really want you to listen how doctrine and what this man believed affected his life. While on America's eastern plains still roamed her forest child, and the new homes of Europe's sons were rising in the wild. That's simply saying that the white people were pushing into the Indian territory. Upon a clearing in a wood, Amos had built his cot. He tilled his little farm and lived contented with his lot. A just, peace-loving man was he. It's doctrine. Kind unto all and true. That's doctrine. He tilled his little farm. That's doctrine. And lived contented with his lot. That's two. Also, contentment is doctrine. A just, peace-loving man was he, kind unto all and true. And well his ever-open door the wandering Indian knew. But often were the settlers' lands by force or fraud obtained, and to the red man dispossessed, revenge alone remained. And round the blazing fire of logs, when winter night was cold, to shuddering listeners, dreadful tales of Indian raids were told. But Amos feared not, though his home all undefended lay, and still his never-bolted door was open night and day. One morn a neighbor passed in haste. Indians, they say, are nigh. So Amos, bolt your door tonight and keep your powder dry. My friend, said he, the God I serve commands me not to kill, and sooner would I yield my life than disobey his will. One gun I have, but used alone against the wolf or bear. To point it at my fellow man, my hand would never dare. But I shall put the thing away. They shall not see it here. For thee, O gun, in hands unskilled, might do some harm, I fear. Besides, the Indians are my friends. They would not do me ill. Here they have found an open door, and they shall find it still. Well, said the neighbor as he went, my faith is not so clear. If wretches come to take my life, I mean to sell it dear. But the good wife of Amos stood and listened with affright. Unless, she said, that door is fast, I shall not sleep tonight. And with her words, as women can, she urged her husband sore, till for the sake of household peace, at last he barred the door. They went to rest, and soon the wife was wrapped in slumber deep. But Amos turned and tossed about, and vainly tried to sleep. Then came a voice within his heart, a mild rebuke it bore. It whispered, thou of little faith, why hast thou barred the door? Weak is that poor defense of thine against a hostile band. Stronger than strongest fortresses, the shadow of my hand. Hast thou not said these many times that I have power to save? As when my servant's trembling feet were sinking neath the wave. Now let thy actions with thy words in full accord agree. Rise quickly and unbar thy door and trust alone in me. Then Amos from his bed arose and softly trod the floor, crept down the stairs, and noiselessly unbarred the cottage door. Then forth he looked into the night, starlight it was and still, and slowly rose the waning moon behind the tree-fringed hill. He looked with trustful, reverent gaze up to the starry sky, as meets a child with loving glance a tender father's eye. The cloud was lifted from his brow. His doubts were over now. The cool air breathed a kiss of peace upon his tranquil brow. Then back to his forsaken bed, he slowly groped his way and slept the slumber of the just until the dawn of day. That night, a painted warrior band through the dark forest sped with steps as light upon the leaves as panthers stealthy tread. They reached the farm. We make no war with good and faithful men. The foremost Indian turned and said, here dwells the son of Penn. But brother, if still his heart is right, how shall we surely know? Answered another, time brings change and often turns a friend to foe. Said the first one, I will go and gently try the door. If open still, it proves his heart is as it was before. It yielded, and they entered in. Across the room they stepped, and came where Amos and his wife, calm and unconscious, slept. With tomahawk and scalping knife, they stood beside the pair. A solemn stillness filled the room. An angel guard was there. The eye sought eye and seemed to say, how sound the good man sleeps. So may they rest and fear no ill whom the great spirit keeps. Then noiselessly they left the room and closed the door behind. And on their deadly war trail passed some other prey to find. And horror shrieked around their steps and bloodshed marked their way. And many homes were desolate when rose another day. But Amos, with a thankful heart, greeted the morning light and knew not until after years how near was death that night. Does doctrine matter? Right here, the doctrine is not whether you lock your doors or don't lock your doors. This was a very unique situation. But the thing was here is he loved all men. He trusted God, and he trusted him to the end. Those are so many different aspects of teaching and doctrine hidden in that. What you believe does make a difference. We believe that the newborn again, experience takes a man or woman and could and should and can so radically change them that they become new creatures in Christ Jesus. Our doctrine is one that accepts that we are given a new heart. It not only accepts, it expects a new heart. The old, stony, selfish, stubborn heart is removed and replaced with a willing desire to follow and obey the Lord Jesus Christ. A man once said to Dwight Moody, "Sir, the doctrine you preach is absurd. You say you only have to believe on Christ to change the entire course of your life and make sure of heaven. In my opinion, that's ridiculous. I cannot accept your theory." Was it just a theory? Moody replied, "Let's see if I understand you. Are you contending that what a man believes won't change his course of action?" "That's right." Moody continued, "Suppose a man suddenly should cry out right now that your house is on fire. If the flames leaped up and blocked your door, what would you do? If you believed that man, I'm sure that you would try to escape through the large open window, wouldn't you?" "Yes, but I did not think about faith in that light." "No," Moody said, "I guess you didn't." But that is what true believing will do every time. It will change your course of action. Does doctrine matter? It does matter. 1 Timothy 4:16, "Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear you." 2 Timothy 4:3 and 4, "For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall heap to themselves teachers having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables." Turn in your Bible to Proverbs chapter 1. And let's just do a little bit of reading here. Does doctrine matter? Does what we believe matter? Are we supposed to follow good doctrine? Here we have wisdom. Proverbs chapter 1. It says in verse 2, "To know wisdom and instruction." This is why this was written. Solomon wrote this, that we might know wisdom and instruction to perceive the words of understanding. Down to verse 7. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." Does it matter what you believe? Verse 20, talking about wisdom. "Wisdom cries without. She uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates. In the city she uttereth her words, saying, How long, you simple ones, how long?" Or, "Will you, how long, ye simple ones, will you love simplicity? And scorners delight in the scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you." Wisdom. My definition for wisdom is taking what you know and living it out in light of eternity. Unfortunately, people have largely forgotten that there's a huge difference between intelligence and wisdom. Intelligence is the measurement of things you know. Wisdom is your ability to discern right from wrong and make moral choices. A wise person will follow God. An intelligent person may or may not. So Proverbs is full of doctrine, teachings. One of them is wisdom. Another doctrine that we would find in here is in verse 10 of chapter 1. "My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not." And after a lengthy explanation of what happens to the one who foolishly consents, this is the doctrine of separation. He goes on to say what would happen to a person like that. And so wisdom is speaking. Wisdom calls for a carefulness in who you hang around with. Another doctrine. Who are you spending time with? That's a good doctrine. Be very careful, because you'll be the same person in 5 years that you are today, except for the books you read and the people you hang out with. When I was a youth, I was with the most careful youth group in our church. There was two main groups, and then in those groups there were a couple more groups. I was in the most careful one. But even in there, I was a young man, I was a bit simple, and I was not real careful with some of the friends I hung out with. And I was hanging out with a friend that didn't do well. And, of course, he listened to the radio. When we were together, we listened to the radio. And I don't know, except my sister may have went to my parents and warned them of who I'm hanging out with. My dad came to me. And because of this whole idea of separation and that influence affects us, my father asked me to cut off the relationship with him. And I did. It was very disappointing. I enjoyed our relationship. But today, I know where he's at. I know where I'm at. I wouldn't have wanted to follow his road. Good doctrine. There's many doctrines or teachings. They're good ones. They're beautiful. This thing of sound doctrine, good doctrine, is the idea of they're beautiful. They are, it's like seeking the best good doctrine, seeking the best teachings. And so we have here in Proverbs, obeying and honoring, respecting parental authority. And he says it's going to be like an ornament of grace, like a chain around your neck. It will beautify your life. Of course, a lot of us don't consider that necessarily beauty, but the world does consider it beautiful. Well, obeying and honoring, respecting our parents is a doctrine, and it beautifies our life. Another good doctrine, a best doctrine, a beautiful doctrine in Proverbs chapter 6. Just skipping through, seeing a few things here. In verse 20 says, "My son, keep thy father's commandments and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thy heart. Tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, they shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, they shall keep thee. And when thou walkest, they shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life." What are they to do? "To keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman. Lust not after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread. The adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? So he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever touches her, shall not be innocent. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he's hungry. But if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house." What that's saying is, there's some things you can do that you can actually make up for. A man steals because he's hungry. He can pay a fine and he can go free. But he says it's not that way about adultery. "Whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away." We heard that this morning. What Jerry said, there are things, our sins can be wiped away, but the consequences cannot be. And that's what it's talking about here. There are consequences. For jealousy is the rage of a man, therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not regard any ransom, neither will he rest content, though thou givest many gifts. Just some doctrine. And I'm not going to, I have a lot of other scriptures to go to, but I would like to give you one other story and highlight a number of teachings or doctrines that were missing that really, really ended up making his life really difficult. So back years ago when we went still going into Lebanon doing street witnessing, we found this man who was living on the street. He had a wife and he had children, but he had a PFA against him. He wasn't allowed to go home because he was violent. He was abusive. He never learned, well, he never got born again, the doctrine of being born again. He never learned how to be kind and gentle and caring and to know how to even care for a wife and let alone care for children. So he was living on the street. They were living in the house, and he was, of course, supposed to be providing for them. One winter night, David Oberholzer, Clinton's son David, he called me up and says he really feels bad for Joseph. He's living on the street. I said, you know what? I believe it's time that we put him in a motel. So we went and found him. We brought him out here. If you go back the road where Jordan and Clarissa live, and then right along the interstate, there used to be an old set of motels there, motel rooms you could rent. And we put him in there. And he was in there 3 days. He worked for John Nolt for 2 days. And the third day, he worked for me. The third day in the evening, it was about 4 o'clock in the evening, he said, can I call my nephew in the city? And so he picked up the phone, and he called his nephew in the city. When he got off the phone, he said, I got to talk to you. I got to talk to David. Can we go over to the motel room? And I said, sure. I know what's going on. So we went over to the motel room. David came. I came. We stepped inside with him. And he locked the door. He said, the FBIs are after me. I said, the FBIs are after you? What did you do? He said, well, before you picked me up 3 days ago, I robbed the store at gunpoint. I'm like, what? Anyhow, he said, I'm out of here. I'm running. I know how to get away from the police. I said, no, you're not. We're going to take you into the city, and you're going to turn yourself in. And we had a good argument going for a while, back and forth, back and forth. Finally, he dropped on his knees, and he started praying. And here's some things that he said that were missing in good doctrine that were missing in his life. One of the things he said in his prayer was, the street was my father. You know, this whole thing of the doctrine of father, a mother, children who obey their parents, most of the world don't have it. He didn't have it. Another thing he said in his prayer was he praying to God, he talked about getting into drugs at age 11 and 12. Young man. The idea of carrying a gun to steal. What was he stealing for? He wanted to buy his daughter a birthday gift. And I don't even know how much money he had. He didn't get much money. He wanted to buy his daughter a birthday gift. There were so many things in his life that were missing. And I guess, as I look at it, I think it's so important as young people to really embrace doctrine and teachings. His life was a mess. So anyhow, just if you didn't hear the story before, just to end that story for you, was he finally got up off his knees after praying for 20 minutes or so and crying out to God, sobbing and crying. There was a puddle under him till he was done. Tears. And on his feet, he says, I'm ready to go to prison. But he said,
I've been in prison before. Could I have one good meal before I go? It's 11 o'clock at night. Call my wife up and say, get food ready. Joseph needs a good meal before we go in, turn him in. And so we got him there, and he's slowly eating, enjoying his food. And I'm thinking, hurry up. The FBI's are after you. I don't want to get caught with you in my hands. And so he finally got done eating. We went into the city. He wanted to stop at his nephew's house. And we just pulled up to the curb, and his niece came out and said, get out of here. Police were all around his house a little bit ago. We knew they're after him. So we went to the police station. You park on the other side. We're walking across. Police comes around the corner, puts his passenger window down, and says, are you Joseph? He says, yes, I am. I'm turning myself in. He said, good for you, sonny. It'll go better for you. So we walk into the police station. He goes to the window. He says, Joseph Rivera, I'm turning myself in. And he came out. Anyway, the police was kind of jovial. He said, you want the cuffs on the front or on the back? I don't even know how he did it. But we were walking out of there, and David's cell phone rang. It was my wife. She said, the police are at our door. And they're just wanting to make sure that he's in there. And he turned himself in. Apparently, all we can figure out, they tapped the phone line to that house that he called to, and they knew he was there. They knew he was at our place. They parked a cruiser. Then you get to the two buildings, first buildings there, they parked the cruiser sideways across there. I'm just here to tell that story, to tell you there are a lot of people today whose life have been ruined because they didn't even know good doctrine. We're here today. We know doctrine. And doctrine is good. And doctrine is sound. We can read through Titus chapter 2. There it tells what doctrine does to an older man. Makes their life just beautiful. And an older woman. And a young man. And a young woman. Doctrine makes their life beautiful. And my appeal today is, when somebody starts talking about doctrine being stuffy or divisive, come back to them and tell them, you know, my life is blessed over and over and over again because of doctrine. I appreciate doctrine. I'm going to hold to doctrine. I'm going to embrace doctrine. Talking earlier about lying. Out there in Bern, Indiana, Aiden Troyer, I stayed at Aiden Troyer's house. He said not long ago, he was coming up the road, the major road out there, just out from the end of their road, and he saw these two vehicles have pulled off the road, and before he got there, they both pulled out again, and the one went up beside the other and just simply ran the other one right off the road, down in the ditch. And he said, the fella that got run off the road got him out, and he was so mad at the other fella. Anyhow, so he drove past, and he thought, what should he do? He saw this happen. He stayed at the end of their road and just waited till the police came. He was scared. He thought it might be a shootout. Who knows what will happen? And after the police came, then he drove down the road, and he saw the man who ran the other one off the road talking to the police. And so he pulled in, he walked over close enough to hear what's going on, and this man was lying up a storm. A total lie. And Aiden said, he walked up and said to the police, I saw it happen. He's lying. And the police said, I could tell that. I thought that was interesting. You know, just a simple thing of the doctrine of just say the truth. So many people get their lives into such a mess because of a simple thing like a lie. The Bible says, I give you sound doctrine. I give you good doctrine. Embrace doctrine. Let the rest of the world talk about how stuffy and divisive it is. And of course, there are some things I think we shouldn't waste our time with. As far as exactly how the end of the world is going to happen, I think we can have some bantering back and forth and throw ideas back and forth. At the end of the day, exactly the way it's going to be, I don't think should matter because that can become very divisive. Let's not be divisive. But there are plenty of other teachings, simple teachings and doctrines
that are such a blessing and should be such a blessing to our life. So, in closing, the doctrines or teachings of God, Jesus, Holy Spirit, Satan, His kingdom, the church, doctrines of the church such as separation from the world, modesty, communion, feet washing, headship order, the headship order, God, Jesus, man, woman, headship veiling, the holy kiss, and many, many others. Those are the doctrines we tend to kind of shy away from a little bit because they can be so divisive. But I think we've seen this morning that doctrine goes so much further than that. It's the doctrine of being kind, the doctrine of being gentle, the doctrine of truthfulness, the doctrine of the home and good relationships, the father, mother, children are such a blessing. So doctrines, sound doctrine and good doctrine will make our lives beautiful and attractive. Okay, we are almost at lunchtime. A few minutes. I think we're going to go ahead and pray for the meal. And then as soon as they open the curtains, you can find your way over there. Just take what you've heard this morning and embrace it and apply it to your lives. And be hearers of the word, because it's the one that does it that will be blessed in his deeds.